to Talking Points, the loverupbilly.com podcast. My name's Dave Parkinson. I'm alongside Adrian Jackson, and we're here with this Four Nations special.
Yeah, it's great to be talking about the Four Nations in terms of action on the field rather than just talking about what might happen.
Most definitely. There were two interesting games to kick the tournament off. It all began last Friday night. A packed Warrington. Wasn't it great to see nearly 12,500 people there on the terraces? I know they're there nearly every week anyway.
Look, the rubber lead on the in Warrington. Absolutely, it was great to see that many fans turn up to watch the opener of the Four Nations. It just shows you the Warrington public. They love the rubber lead, don't they? And if the Halliwell Jones Stadium gets to go ahead as a venue for the World Cup in 2013, it'll be another impressive attendance. But having said that, out of the 12,500 fans that were there at the Halliwell Jones Stadium, I actually thought 12,400 of them were willing New Zealand on to victory.
I think you're quite right there, and they would have been very disappointed with the way that the Australians started the game, because they started much the better side, scored after just a couple of minutes. Matthew Scott rolling his way through from about 10 metres. That was a great start, wasn't it, for Australia?
Great start for Australia, and that's what it's about, isn't it? It's all about getting out the blocks quick and maintaining the start of the game that you've shown. But unfortunately for Australia, unfortunately for New Zealand, the Aussies couldn't keep up that start, could they?
I think you're being a bit harsh on them, because they built a 16-0 advantage at half-time there. But I do get where you're coming from, because certainly for the next 20 minutes it was nip and tuck, wasn't it? And to be honest, when Tony Williams charged his way through, it was somewhat against the run of play, wasn't it? Because New Zealand managed to get a couple of back-to-back sets on the Australian line.
They did, but during that time as well, it just showed you just how strong Australia are going to be in defence in this tournament.
Just a couple of minutes before half-time, we haven't really seen much of him up until this point, but Jonathan Thurston really lit up the game, didn't he? First of all, his little 1-2 pass with Tony Williams, that saw him make the break, and then Williams' pass inside. It wasn't the greatest, but Jonathan Thurston able to pick it up off his bootstraps and stroll in for the try.
Great performance from Jonathan Thurston. The slow start, I'll admit that one, but he did the work when it mattered most, and that's when he did the damage as well. I suppose the telling one was when he set up that great try for Darius Boyd.
Great try, that one as well. That came in the second half, and that was after a New Zealand fight back. Now, we're going to be hearing a little bit more from two of the guys who were the stars of the show in Sam Thaiday and Jason Nightingale. Adrian managed to catch up with both of those, but certainly early doors in the second half, New Zealand really did need to put the points on, didn't they? And they managed to pull the try back through Nightingale himself.
He took his try well, didn't he? And that's what it's all about. It's all about taking the chances when they come your way, and that's exactly what Nightingale did. Unfortunately, this is where it's been. Osher just had a bit too much strength in depth on the night.
Khalifa Fifaloa got a second try for New Zealand, and at 16 points to 12, it was game on. And we were perhaps thinking, could the New Zealanders do this to Australia yet again? They've come up against Australia so many times in big games over the last few years and managed to trump them. But it wasn't to be. Certainly, Kevin Lott, the New Zealand fullback, he picked up an injury, and the New Zealanders were never the same after that, were they? And that's where Jonathan Thurston came up, helped set up that try for Darius Boyd.
The Kiwis did have a chance of mounting a comeback, didn't they? But unfortunately, it was ended by a matter of inches when Jason Nightingale somehow managed to get his hands on the ball, flicked it back from a clever Benji Marshall kick for Lott to touchdown in the corner. But unfortunately, the video referee spotted that the New Zealand had both feet on the dead ball line.
And that was a really unlucky play, because Nightingale did tremendously well just to get on the end of that ball, didn't it? So it was a cruel stroke of fate, really, that he got denied him. That came just a couple of minutes after a touch of controversy in the game when David Shillington was forced off with a knee injury. This came following what was later declared by the Australian coaching staff as a cannonball tackle. Did you see anything wrong with it?
I didn't myself. I just thought it was a big impact in the tackle, and the damage was done on impact between the players, but obviously the Australian coaching team see it differently.
I mean, certainly, there was three players, weren't they, going at the Australian player, and, well, the body isn't meant to bend in certain ways, and sadly, for me, I saw it like you did. I thought that his body just bent in a certain way and was forced down. Warrior Hargreaves really did wrestle him down on top, and it was the hooker Isaac Luke who was underneath it all.
Exactly right. If you're getting pulled from one direction to the other, well, you're not going to stay on your feet. And unfortunately, as he's gone down, all that weight from the and the defending players have come right down on his knee, but once again, Australia seeing it from a different angle than we're being used to. So they're actually saying New Zealand did it deliberately.
Akuila Uwate got the final try for Australia, 5 minutes from the end, and a 14-point winning margin for Australia. Did that flatter him?
I thought it was a first goal like myself, and it wasn't the big intensive game I was expecting, to be honest. I just got the impression both teams were feeling the way in to this year's tournament and getting used to the surroundings of playing rugby league in the UK.
Now, Adrian caught up, first of all, with the New Zealand try scorer, Jason Nightingale, and this is what he had to say.
Jason Nightingale's opening games of the Four Nations go. How did you feel it went tonight?
Better than last time we played them. Still weren't good enough, but we definitely improved from last outing.
So it's about it really, it's all about improvement, but obviously you would have been better to have got the result.
Yeah, definitely. We had an opportunity and probably started before the game. We can't give them 16 points and then expect to track them down, but we still had an opportunity. We played well enough at the start of that second half to get ourselves back in it, but let it slip again.
16 down at half-time, what was said at half-time?
Well, I think it was just... just don't let an opportunity slip.
And you did come out second half, you did improve, you got the tries on board, just wasn't enough on the night though.
Yeah, we just needed to stay in the grind, and the point where we lost staying in the grind is the point when we lost the game. We were working hard and got those two tries, and then two incompleted sets in a row, and that was the end.
Now, as games go, did you think it had the same intensity as the game in Newcastle?
No, not really. It was hard to have the sort of intensity, and it was obviously more competitive, and we were a lot better. But it was a lot slower. It's probably due to conditions.
Now the beauty of this tournament is you've got a game next week. Wales, is that the perfect game to bed yourself into the tournament?
No, not really. I'd probably rather back up off that into England, but. It gives us a great opportunity to recuperate initially because we've got an 8-day turnaround, just harness a few things that we needed to improve on and really rely on what we need to improve on and worry about ourselves.
Just looking at Australia, how do you think they were tonight?
Yeah, they were solid. We showed that we could put it with them at the times, but. Not at the start of the game when we needed to, and not in the end of that second half. So, they were good. They put us under pressure, and we were under pressure a lot at the start of the game, and that's the intensity they brought to the game.
Now for yourself, how do you think they went for yourself over the 8 minutes?
Yeah, it went all right. One error, it was pretty bad. Drop ball and competing, but other than that, I was pretty solid and usual consistent self.
Getting the victory, but hopefully you'll be getting the win against Wales and maybe make your way to the final at Elland Road.
Yeah, that's obviously, like I said, worry about ourselves this week. It's more about what we're doing. And then obviously the big game against England to see who reaches the final.
Jason Nightingale, he was disappointed perhaps with that performance in the end, but surely that's much better than the last outing when they got beat 42 points to 6 by Australia.
And that's exactly what he said, didn't he? It was better than the last outcome, but unfortunately it still ended up with the same result, and that's a defeat at the hands of the Kangaroos. So New Zealand to be aware of where they went wrong in the game against Australia at Warrington, and they'll be going all out guns blazing and to try and put it right and get that victory that they're going to have to get against Australia to lift the Four Nations trophy, which means I'm predicting that Australia are going to be in the final.
You turncoat.
Edit that.
Now, Adrian also had a very interesting experience awaiting to interview the Australians as well. What time was it when you conducted this particular interview, Adrian?
20 to 12. Yeah, of course, it was Sam Friday eventually, literally 1 hour and 40 minutes after the game had finished. That was after the Australians decided to stay in the dressing rooms and chill out for a bit after the game.
I'm surprised that any of the other press managed to stop out that late, to be honest, because surely they would have all had the deadlines to meet, but I was guessing there would be rather a crowd waiting outside the Australian dressing room.
There was, and there was plenty of fans outside still waiting for autographs. And to be fair, the Australian players did sign those autographs as they were walking out.
That's good. But let's hear from Sam Thaiday now.
Sam Fyday's opening game to go in the Four Nations tournament. How did the Australian team think about that game tonight?
Very fast, very intense. It was very physical. But it was good to get that first win out, and you know, we'll ice up the injuries now and move on and refocus on trying to beat England now.
You said the game was a fast game. You got off to a flying start. Perfect start to a game.
Yeah, it was a very good start to the game. But you know, where we did fall down was that second half. We didn't come out and start the way we did in the first half. So that's something we're going to have to work on during the week, and hopefully we can get that right.
It was New Zealand were going to come out and improve with the boys aware of that.
Yeah, 100%. We played them a couple of weeks ago in Newcastle, and we put a few points on them there, and we knew that they weren't going to lay down over here, and they didn't tonight. We really let them back in that game, and they are a very dangerous team if you let them play the style of football they like to play.
To make sure you got, what kind of message does that send out to the opposition in this tournament from Australia?
Hopefully it sends a good message out there, and hopefully it sends a good message out to our boys too, and it shows us that we're going to have to work very hard for every win we're going to get in this tour.
Two massive packs in the middle of the field. Must have been hard work in the middle.
Yeah, very hard work. A lot of the boys are in there icing injuries, and they're very sore and tired. So, you know, I'm sure everyone's going to be right, and everyone's going to put their hand up come next week, because no one wants to miss out for playing for Australia.
Australia known for playing a good attacking rugby league, and that was the case tonight.
Yeah, you know, a lot of things did work out for us in that first half. We got a few set moves going. We didn't want to let every little play out of the bag, but you know, a few things really worked for us tonight, and you know, we'll sharpen up our skills over the next couple of weeks, and hopefully we're playing our best football in the final.
Now, for yourself personally, how do you think your time on the pitch went?
Yeah, I got a few minutes out there. I didn't get the whole 80 out. I would have liked to do that, but I'm not a big fan of this cold air over here, but hopefully I can get used to it over the next couple of weeks.
It'll be a bit warmer for you in Wembley.
I hope so. Hopefully the crowd can make it a little bit warmer for us.
It's a great start to the tournament. Good luck for the rest of it.
Thank you very much, mate.
Australian second row of Sam Fyday, 35 tackles, 15 hit-ups, 117 metres. You can tell I've not read that, can't you?
That's exactly what you need in your team, isn't it? You need someone in the engine room to do all the hard graft and let the superstars of your team in Knights and Lockyer and First and do what they do best.
Now, you know how much I rate Ben Westwood of Warrington, and certainly he's had a big influence on the way that England has played their rugby over the last couple of weeks since returning from his injury. But Sam Fyday, I would liken him to an Australian Ben Westwood. What do you reckon?
Can't disagree with it, because they've got the same work ethic, haven't they? Same work ethic in the sense that they seem to want to cover every blade of grass during the day, during the time they're on the pitch, and they seem to want to make every tackle that has to be made, and that's something you can't teach. That's just embedded into your mind and your heart.
It's instinct, isn't it?
If you want to call it instinct, I call it that. I just call it hard-working players.
Another hard-working player, Cameron Smith, whilst we're on the subject of stats, he made 54 tackles for Australia. Now, if he's making 54 tackles, Sam Fyday's making 35 tackles, who's making the rest of the tackles for the Aussie team, when you bear in mind that about 300 tackles are made per side in a game of rugby league?
Now, they're obviously going to say we do share the burden of defence. When you look at the stats and you break it all down, it does look like only Fyday and Cameron Smith have put the bodies on the line, but that isn't the case, and we know that.
Well, it is, I suppose, because also if I look at Darren Lockyer, for example, he had a bit of a quiet game, I would say, with the with ball in hand. We know that he's probably going to be feeling his way into this tournament. We know what class he possesses. He is a very, very classy player, but I just thought that he was very quiet. I also thought as well, Benji Marshall had his most quiet game for New Zealand too.
That's exactly why I said I thought the game overall, they were just testing each other out to get used to the surroundings of playing in a different country. Don't forget, they've only been in the country a week before that game, so they're still acclimatising.
That's true. Perhaps I'm being a little bit harsh, but I expected a bit more from that game than what we actually got. Now, it might have come down to refereeing interpretations. Very, very slow play, the balls. There was hands in. There was a lot of interference. I thought that Phil Bentham just didn't referee it like he has been doing in Super League all year.
I mean, because it is a Four Nations tournament that have Australia and New Zealand decided, we'll get our game out of the way and then raise our game against England if they know you beat England, they both couldn't be in the final.
Just keeps you ramping it up, is it, basically, as we go on through the tournament.
Yeah. But that's what it's about, isn't it? It's all about getting off to a start, and then if you lose, improve on where you thought you went wrong, and if you win that game as well, which is what Australia did, it's all about improving that winning performance, and I'm sure both teams would have watched that England-Wales game with close intensity on Saturday, and they'll be looking to improve their performance when they do take on England.
Talking of that England-Wales game, it was played at Lee Sports Village. Over 10,000 were there for that game, a crowd record for the stadium. And 42 points to 4, did that tell the whole story of the game as far as England and Wales were concerned?
I don't think it did, because a bit like Austria and New Zealand, I thought England really slowly worked their way into that game, didn't they? And seems to be getting the feelings out for the tournament as a whole, and I'm sure there's room for improvement. But Steve McManara will be very happy to have got that game done and dusted with very little controversy.
I've got to feel sorry for former witness forward Jordan James, because he took an almighty hit from Ben Westwood of all people after just 10 seconds of the game, which basically put him out for a large period of it.
It did, didn't it? And how many times have we seen Ben Westwood do that in Super League? He goes rampaging in after the first kickoff, looking to stamp his authority in the middle of the pitch, and unfortunately Jordan James is the man who we've seen stars.
Sam Tompkins scored the first try for England after just a minute. It was the first of four tries for the Wigan fullback. What do you make of his performances? Is he getting better? Is he the best player on the planet?
I think you disagree with the best player on the planet. I think you'd say Darren Lockie, wouldn't you? But he's improving. He is only still young, isn't he, in terms of international appearances. And he even has an experienced play within Super League. So he's going to get better as he gets older, but based on his performances so far, it's breathtaking. It's great for the fact that he's English.
He seems to like playing at the Lee Sports Village. I make that 8 tries that he scored playing for England at the Lee Sports Village. Is it something in the water?
maybe because he's a Wigan, he wants to score tries locally, I don't know.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? But Tompkins scored the second try after 16 minutes, and then Yeaman got over after 22 minutes. Really neat finish in the corner, that one, wasn't it?
Yeah, again, another well-taken try by a wingman on the right corner, wasn't it? And had a lot of weight to do, didn't have much room to play with. But Wales might look at the defence and think, could we have done better?
14-0 at the break, and to be honest, was that a good reflection at the time, do you think?
I thought England were the best team from the off. I thought they were comfortable. I thought they dominated it. Wales, okay, they did roll the sleeves up and try and make a game of it, but England were cruising.
Tompkins completed his hat-trick just 10 minutes inside the second half. That re-followed up his first try for England against France last week with another effort. When Sam Tompkins completed his fourth try after 58 minutes, it looked like it was going to be a cricket score, didn't it?
Well, it was game over as the contest, wasn't it? And from that point onwards, once Sam Tompkins had scored his hat-trick try, it was damage limitation for Euston House's men. And to be fair, they did improve in that second half.
They did. Elliot Keir, who's going to be pulling on a Bradford jersey next season, he scored a smart try in the corner, didn't he? And Elliot Keir was one of several Welsh players who was able to hold his head up high at the end of the game.
It was a spirited performance from Wales. I think there's more than just Elliot Keir who could hold his head up high and say I had a decent performance. But unfortunately, when you look at the quality of players that Steve McManara could select for his team, and you look at where Yeston Harris had to go and beg and steal players for his squad, it's a tale of two teams, isn't it?
I suppose as well, when you also look at how France have gone on this past weekend when they've taken on Scotland, very, very similar type of position, really, for England going up against Wales. They're going up against a number of players who are just playing part-time rugby. Some of them who have stepped up 1, 2, 3, 4 levels to reach international standard. It's a huge gulf, isn't it?
It's a massive gulf, and it showed it during that game. England, for me, they had a couple of gears left where they were really pressed by the opposition. They could have gone up another gear and canted away from what was a plucky performance from Wales, but you always felt Wales, if you're going to pull anything out of the hat from the game, they have to play at the best for the full 80 minutes.
and it was England who played for the full 80 minutes. Two tries in the last 4 minutes. Chris Hyington scoring his first international try, and Gareth Widdop scoring a great effort towards the back end. I really rate Widdop. I think he's come on a bundle since he made his England international debut.
He has, thankfully, chosen the rather than Australia, isn't he? And it just gives England a bit more strength in depth in terms of selection, rather than just having to go from Super League. It's good to have players within our squad who have had the experience of playing in the NRL week in, week out, and that could only be good for England when they do take on New Zealand and Australia. They've got that inside knowledge.
Well, he's a good Halifax boy as well, isn't he? We'd have maybe taken it back far enough. And I tell you what, I bet his parents were absolutely chuffed sitting there in the crowd. Let's hear from the coaches and see what they thought about the performance. First of all, here is Steve McNamara from England.
Oh, I'm really pleased. I think it was a potentially really tough hurdle for us, playing Wales in the first game of the competition. With Wales probably at the healthiest they're going to be throughout the competition and ready to play, and that, you know, probably their big shot at us. So to come out of the game with a scoreline, the second half, I think we were played with real control. I'm really pleased with. When you've got an international squad and you've got 24 international class players, there's always some players who don't make the team. There's always some players who are on the bench, and it's that's how it should be at international level. Gareth put himself in contention. He's always in contention, but he brings a new dimension to us when he comes on. But whether we do continue to do that or start with him, we'll wait and see how the week pans out. I know Sam's grabbed the headlines in terms of the four tries that he scored, but I thought Kevin, his control of the game, his involvements, his quality involvements within the game, and you could probably hear his talk from the sideline as well, the influence that he has on the rest of the group is enormous. Well, it's a completely different game. It'll be a completely different focus, different mindset, and we just can't wait to get our week's preparations underway, which they're underway. The boys are recovering as we speak. The boys who aren't playing are out on the field training hard now, and everything is focused solely on winning at Wembley next week. I thought obviously New Zealand responded from what happened back in Newcastle, and I think both sides probably still finding the legs a little bit in terms of after the flight, which is it takes it out of you. But it's a typical Australia-New Zealand game. I think there was plenty of feeling within the game, and I think both teams will improve as they go on. We'll probably just focus on what we're doing and the speed at which we're trying to play at. And I've had this numerous times. Every single time we go into a tournament, we get called whinging poms, but it still seems to sit here listening to other people whinging about everything what goes on. And I sort of like get sick to the teeth of it, to be honest with you. We'll go there and play. And whatever referee we get, I thought Henry did a great job today in terms of controlling both teams and letting the game have some rhythm and momentum about it. I thought he did a good job. I think you need two teams that want to comply as well at the same time. I think credit to Wales, they came to play some rugby league, as England did. Oh, we didn't want to concede. Obviously, we would like to have kept a zero, but Wales had some opportunities in the first half and we managed to keep them out. But we got caught a little bit there on that play, and obviously we'll look at that as other aspects of the game. But you've got to say, I want to back up what JP said. I think real credit to Wales. Very impressed by what they're trying to do, and they've got some great young talent within their group. I think with all our players, they're just going to get better and better as this competition goes along. We are a relatively new group with some of the additions that we've had, and it's going to take some time, but I think the seeds are there for us to grow from this point.
Steve McNamara certainly quite content with that, really, didn't he?
Job well done, wasn't it? It's all about getting the tournament off to a victory, and that's where it was, because don't forget, before the game, could have been a potential banana skin that one, but England overcome that hurdle rather comfortable.
Welsh coach, yes, Steve Harris. Well, this is what he thought of the game.
I'm really proud of them. Certainly the way they physically stood up, mentally stood up through some testing periods through that game. I thought our game awareness wasn't as good as what it should be, and something we need to work on this week. And, we made a few sort of individual errors which allowed them to have easy possession in our area. When they've got good players like they've got, eventually you're going to leak points when you do that, but you know, I can safely say I'm super, super proud of the way they've the way they dug in for each other, and you know, and stood up when they needed to stand up. You know, like I said, we just need to work on some areas of our game to improve, and you know, they're fully aware of that and on board and excited about improving themselves. You know, Jordan James, you know, recovered very well and you know, put his hand up amicably and said, "I'm ready to go back on," you know, when he was flat out unconscious. So, you know, and I think, you know, that's a mark of the group, really. They want to work for each other and they want to improve and help each other improve. And, you know, that wasn't a great start for us, but, you know, I thought throughout the 80 minutes there were some good signs that some of these guys can step up a level and improve themselves at this level. Matt Seamax, his debut, and you know, had a real dig. You know, again, he's got some things to work on in his game, but he's only a young boy. He's only 20 years old and improving himself as a player. And it's, again, about playing at this level. And when you play at this level consistently, you get used to game management situations, and I'm sure they will do. Yeah, and again, I thought, you know, some of our timing was off offensively, and you know, that comes down to, you know, some of the guys haven't played. They played against Ireland last week, but outside of that, it's been 6 and 7 and 8 weeks. Some of these guys haven't played, and you know, it takes a while for your timing to come back. And you know, when they had opportunities in the second half in that area, I thought they were a little bit better. We've just got to create more of them opportunities by our game management in situations. So, you know, they'll work hard this week, and you know, we'll regroup and get ourselves physically recovered, mentally recovered, and try and improve ourselves. England have got a strong squad. You know, and they've obviously got a full belief that they can go on and win this competition. And
yes, Dean Harris justifiably proud of the effort from his boys, but they were lacking in class, weren't they?
Wales, it's always going to be the case, wasn't it? It's all about damage limitation for Wales. Can they put in a good performance and show to all the critics that maybe say, should Wales be actually in this tournament playing England, New Zealand and Australia? Can Wales compete? I think in certain aspects of that game, it did show to the watching people that Wales can compete, and they're not going to be in there just to make the numbers up. They're in there to improve as a team and to make life difficult for their opposition.
I'll tell you what was great, and it was seeing Lee Breeders pull on that Welsh jersey again. It always means so much to him, doesn't it, to play for Wales?
He always plays with his heart on his sleeve, doesn't he? He's always enthusiastic for the Welsh cause. He knows it's going to be difficult. He knows he could be on the end of some hidings, but as long as he feels that him, himself, and the team around him played to the best of their ability and competed for the full 80, he'd be happy with that.
And Ian Watson as well, though. It's hard to believe Ian Watson started his international career way back in 1995 playing against America. So many years later, he's still at it.
It shows he's still got a hunger for the game, doesn't it?
We'll look forward to seeing how he develops with the Swinton Lions next season as they take on the rigours of the Championship. Speaking of Swinton, they've signed another player to their squad last week. They added Adam Hickson from Leigh Centurions, one of 13 players with former league connections. They've added another player with former league connections. We're talking about big former Widnes prop David Mills. That's a great signing for him, isn't it?
It is, and it's another raid on Lee, isn't it? And it seems to be that the Lee team is falling apart at the seams in terms of going to other clubs for 2012, which is a shame for Lee, but it's a bonus for all the other teams that are picking up that talent, isn't it, really? I suppose the players that Steve McCormack signed for Swinton Lions, because they are playing the games at the Lee Sports Village, they won't feel like they've left.
I guess they'll look resplendent in the traditional blue and white kit which Swinton have. Speaking of Steve McCormack, he was over in France at the weekend watching his Scotland side take on the French. There was a great crowd over there at Perpignan, 10,300. As good as the crowd over at Lee, to be honest. They just loved their rugby out there at Perpignan, don't they?
That was a great link, by the way, to link up Swinton into Scotland with Steve McCormack, but I'm sure he'll be hoping for a better scoreline in Swinton's opening game, because they did lose out to France quite heavily, 4-6-10. And speaking about the crowd, has a fantastic attendance. It just shows you that the Catalan public really love the rugby league and certainly do in Perpignan.
It was 16-4 at half time in favour of France, and they did pile on the points in the second half. But a spirit spirited response in some respects as far as Scotland are concerned. There's a lot of young players in there. It's a bit of a changing of the guard at the moment, isn't it, for Steve McCormack and what he's trying to do for Scotland Rugby League.
He's in the same position as Justin Harris, isn't he, really? He's got to really beg and steal players from the lower ranks of Rugby League, and he's having to patch them all together and maybe get them working as a unit to maybe compete to the best of their ability. I mean, they'll play the France team. You know, it's basically Pitts and Super League, isn't it, really? And when you bear in mind that some of the Scottish boys play the lower ranks of Rugby League, it's always going to be difficult to compete against a team of that calibre in terms of France.
Well, let's just run through that France lineup: Cyril Stacoul, Vincent Dubois, Jean-Philippe Bale, Matthias Parra, Frederic Vaquerie, Dane Chisholm from Melbourne Storm, Thomas Boss, Catalan Dragons, Jamal Fakir, Kane Bentley, Remy Casti, Olivier Alima, Cyril Gossard and Jason Battieri. There's a heck of a lot of Catalan boys in that one.
I'm impressed with your French as well. It's really good that in there. Yeah, there is. And obviously Bobby Gurdon knows the strength of his French team. That means, unfortunately for Catalan Dragons, picking every player that plays for them, they don't get an off-season.
You've made a good point there, Adrian. I think certainly Trent Robinson will be just pleased to see his boys, won't he?
I'm sure he really had to give them a couple of weeks off before they prepare for Super League. But in terms of that team that Bobby Gurdon's picked, obviously he's got to look out for his own interests rather than the interests of Rugby League as a whole. But I'm sure if, say, for argument, said the European International Federation said to Bobby Gurdon, you can't pick Catalan-based players for your next international, what kind of team would he put together and what scoreline would it be?
Now, that would be an interesting game, that. But I suppose when Scotland dragging players in from Gloucestershire University, I mean, pretty moment for those couple of boys from Gloucestershire University and taking absolutely nothing away from them. But you would expect full-time professionals to really romp it over the college and university boys, wouldn't you?
You would be, bearing in mind that the gap in standards compared to what they're playing week in, week out to the boys of France who play week in, week out in Super League. But that just shows you that Scotland really rolled up the sleeves, and although they were outclassed, it's got to be said, by that French team. They rolled the sleeves up, got stuck in and given a dig, and I'm sure Steve McCormack would have been happy with that, despite the scoreline.
There was a hat-trick there for Dane Chisholm, and he really is making a name for himself amongst that French lineup, isn't he?
He is, and he's a good quality player to have in your ranks, isn't he? And that's the kind of quality that France needs to rely on, don't they? If they are going to win this tournament to get back within the shape-up of the Four Nations. But for France, okay, doing that against Scotland and maybe putting on a big performance against Ireland in the next game of this international series that's taking place at the same time as the Four Nations. The challenge for Bobby Gurdon's men is, can they take it into the Four Nations and do it against Australia? Can they do it against England and do it against New Zealand? It's already been shown in the friendly so far against England Knights and the England full squad that they can't.
It's a €64,000 question, isn't it? We're almost talking about Greece's deficit there, but never mind. Interesting point that you raised. Talking of World Cup qualifiers, though, in fact, we weren't talking about World Cup qualifiers, but we're linked to World Cup qualifiers now. And Italy, they made history. They've qualified for the next World Cup in 2013. With a 19-all draw with Lebanon. Those Lebanese players, they never have any luck, do they? Because they got picked to the post last time. And when it came to qualifying, they've done so again.
Lost that to Ireland last time round in the qualifiers, didn't they? And it's been done to them second time round, this time at the hands of Italy. It'd be interesting to see what Italy bring to the table in next year's World Cup.
It is interesting looking down at Italy line-up. There's a lot of Australian players, and certainly they bring a heck of a lot to that Italian organisation, don't they?
A lot of experience, a lot of ability, and that's what's gave them the strength and the performances to get to the finals of next year's World Cup. But I mean, if you look down the Lebanon team, they've got a pretty similar number of Australians within their team as well. And it was always going to be a big, tough challenge, wasn't it, for both teams? And as it was Italy that had enough on the day.
It was, and it was 18 points to nil at half-time in favour of the Italians. And then Lebanon fought the way back, actually went in front 19-18, only for Italy to slot a drop goal over in the last minute.
And that's what broke the hearts, really, wasn't it? And that done the job for Italy to round off a successful qualifying period and take the final place in next year's World Cup, which takes place in England and Wales for 2013. Interesting, looking at the crowd of 500, for that game. That's obviously going to be the lowest attendance that Anthony Minichel has ever played the game of rugby league in front of.
I bet you're right, though, but he was played, interestingly enough, as well, at the Belgrade Police Academy. I wonder whether we'll see Belgrade Police Academy 2, 3, 4. That wasn't the only international game that was played at the Belgrade Police Academy. Serbia took on Russia, and it was a win for John Stankovic, Russian boys.
He'd be happy with that one, yeah, having had two massive defeats at the hands of Lebanon and Italy, got to play one of their Eastern European rivals. And I suppose this game gave John Stankovic a bit of an idea of what calibre ability his team is at this minute.
I think looking at that, that was a good contest, wasn't it? Finished Serbia 28, Russia 36. Does that not point the way to the fact that we should be looking at a developing Nations World Cup to run alongside the main tournament in 2013?
Yeah, they did it once before, didn't they, in 1995, when they had like the Cook Islands in there with Samoa and Tonga, and they brought a real exciting brand of rugby league that no one within the UK had seen at the time, had they? And if they can do something similar with that, that just opens out the net of rugby league playing nations, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, you could look at it and you could quite easily throw in an Ireland or a Scotland into that tournament, couldn't you?
It'd be an interesting mix, wouldn't it? And I think it'd make for a real good entertaining tournament, but obviously it's a bit late to be doing that for this year, for next year's World Cup, but maybe in future tournaments, maybe the RFL and the International Federation should think about bringing it back.
So that's the results side of things, done and dusted. Forthcoming fixtures this weekend. It's the big one at Wembley. It's a double header. Wales versus New Zealand and England versus Australia. We'll have a little bit of a chat about that in a minute, Adrian. But the other game taking place, Ireland against France from Limerick, of all places. Great to see rugby league getting out to these different towns and cities, isn't it?
It'll be interesting to see how many people from Limerick actually go and watch that game as well. But yeah, good to get the game away from Dublin and go out to the provinces of the Republic of Ireland, and that game could be a good opportunity for Mark Aston to get his first victories as an international coach, as we know about the French, very temperamental when they come over the channel.
And your thoughts as well about the big doubleheader down at Wembley? I think this is a good opportunity for the game, good bit of exposure.
It's great to have international rugby league back at Wembley. You know, we go down there for our Challenge Cup every year in the month of August. We've not had an international game of rugby league at our national stadium since 1997, so it's been a long time between drinks. Hopefully it'll be a big success in terms of tickets sold. At this moment in time, the RFL are hoping to get at least 50,000 under the arch for this one. If they can do that, that'll be deemed a great success. I'm just hoping we get a lot of national publicity from it as well.
Do you think, though, that would be a good success, 50,000 people down there at Wembley for a weekend?
When you look at the attendances for both games in week one of the Four Nations, it's doubled, hasn't it, really? So, yeah, I'd say that was a great success. I mean, you can't go hard on about the days when 80,000 you need to go down to Wembley in the days of Jonathan Davis and Martin O'Fair running over Great Britain. And then days are well gone. In terms of where we are within the international game of rugby league in 2011, I think 50,000 is a real good attendance to pull in.
I tell you what, I bet England would love to have a Martin O'Fair running down the wing, or Wales and Jonathan Davis as well, because they were tremendous players, weren't they?
They were, but it's all about the class of 2011, and I'm sure the question on everybody's lips, can the England team of 2011 beat the Green and Golds?
So that's England against Australia. The earlier game is Wales against New Zealand. This one being shown live on Sky from 1 p.m. And if you haven't got Sky, you can see England against Australia from 3.
It's good that Sky TV is showing one of the games. I'd like to have seen both games shown on terrestrial TV as well. But that isn't the case. As good as England and Australia game is going to be, I think Wales and New Zealand could be just as competitive, because Wales got nothing to lose. If they can go out there and just play the game plan that the Eston has set out for them, get into the faces of the New Zealand team. Because don't forget, this New Zealand team won't know a lot, or if anything, about some of the Welsh guys other than maybe Lee Brace. So maybe Wales could have that unsuspecting wild card within their arms to really upset the form guide there.
That would be tremendous. I tell you what, I bet you'd get great odds if you went and put a couple of pounds on a Wales win.
You get massive odds. Because if Wales did pull it off, that'd be the biggest upset in international rugby league for donkey years. But once again, for Wales, I suppose for them, guys, it's all about damage limitation. They'll be going down there to win the game, but they'll know in their minds it's all about damage limitation and improve on the performance they showed against England.
Now, at the time we're recording this, there's only New Zealand who have named their lineup. Now, they brought Adam Blur into play. Now, he's a very good forward, isn't he? Great offloading game about him.
And that's going to be the threat that Wales are going to be aware of, haven't they? Because once he gets that ball, he sucks in the defenders. He can go to either left or right for that second phase of attack. Once he releases that pass, it's deadly. It's only going to result in one or two things, and that could be a try.
There's also the form of Ben Matalino as well, and certainly looking at him play against Australia last week, I took a look at him and I thought, you know, that's like a young Adrian Morley playing for New Zealand.
I'm sure Adrian Morley will see that as a bit of a compliment as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, great forward. Absolutely great forward, and Matalino has the same sort of potential, I think.
The real powerhouse, isn't he? There's a youngster that's frightened to have in your armoury.
So it's Wales against New Zealand, England against Australia, both at Wembley, Ireland taking on France in Limerick. That's just about us done and dusted for another international talking points here on loverugbyleague.com. Please join us again next week to find out how it all eventuated.